Well, hi, everybody. This is Mark Chaffardini with Go See Talk. We're excited to speak to our next guest, composer Eric Schroeder, about the ultimate playlist of noise exclusively on Hulu streaming services. Eric, welcome to the show. How's your week going so far?
Thank you. It is good. Let's see. Today is Tuesday, so can't complain. It's just getting started. So nothing too crazy's happened yet, thankfully. But you never know right now what's going to happen in this world. So
gotcha.
Right now, well, it's okay.
Well, you're in California?
Yeah, so we're in Thousand Oaks, about 40 minutes or so from Los Angeles. So pretty close to LA, yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'm 2 hours ahead of you, so I guess it looks like my week's going to finish before yours, unfairly. But well, great. Excited to speak with you. I know that I don't get to speak to many composers who have background in theater and music. So maybe explain to us and myself, you know,
sure,
you know, the starting points for you?
Yes. Okay. So long time ago, my parents would take me to theater productions, actually before, you know, really seeing movies that I can remember. And I always remember looking over at the pianist, or if, you know, there was a pit that had, you know, an orchestra or whatever, would always find myself listening to them rather than the performers on stage. And I always thought, man, that is so cool. I wonder how they do it. And then that kind of sparked my interest in piano playing. And so I started taking piano lessons and continued going to theater productions and things like that. And then, you know, got it to this weird place where I was just kind of overplaying classical music, just, you know, I don't know, just was getting over it and burned out, I guess. And instead of, you know, giving up, my parents thought, hey, let's find a different teacher. So long story short, found a different teacher, and that teacher actually happened to produce musicals. And so we were talking to her and, you know, just saying, well, I'm kind of getting burned out on the classical repertoire, although I know it's incredibly important for technique. And I've since gone back to work on classical repertoire. But just at that, you know, place and time, just wanted to explore other options. And like I said, I just, you know, loved theater writing, the sound of theatrical songs and the performances and all that. And so she was like, well, you know, I produce these, you know, youth theater productions. So what about, you know, you coming and watching those pianists and sitting in the pit with them and kind of learning the tricks of the trade and learning to sight read and things like that. And so, you know, I jumped on that and then started accompanying theater productions. And that's kind of how I really got my start. And to be honest, I mean, growing up, although, you know, fell in love with film scores and all that, I think I secretly had always hoped to be, you know, the next Alan Menken, Mark Shaiman, just because they bridged the gap between doing theater and film. And so I was like, oh, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. So, so that's kind of how I got started with theater. And, you know, kind of just went from there. And then to be honest, I actually had looked into applying to the NYU program for theater writing and not even doing film composing. And so had a couple friends do it, loved it, had wonderful experiences. And I thought, hey, I think I'm going to do it. But, you know, life takes you on twists and turns.
Absolutely.
And all of that stuff. And did not apply for that program. And then decided, you know, to fully delve into film scoring. So then kind of went that route with USC. But my heart will always be with theater, and it's something I, you know, hope I get the opportunity to kind of go back and do. I mean, obviously a killer dream job would be, you know, a movie musical kind of thing. That would be an amazing bucket list item. So hopefully in the cards in the future, that can happen.
Okay. Do you have a favorite musical or maybe top three?
Ooh, that's tricky. Cliche, I suppose. but anything by Stephen Sondheim. Huge Stephen Sondheim fan. Obviously Schwartz is amazing with Wicked. you know, Alan Menken, all great writers. But I think I've always gravitated towards Stephen Sondheim's work. And I think it's just because a lot of his stuff kind of breaks the mold. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I love modern theater, like Dear Evan Hansen and things like that. But there's just something unique about Stephen Sondheim's writing that I've always enjoyed, especially, I won't say anything with, you know, Jason Robert Brown, just being a piano player. I've had a lot of fun playing through their music. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, just because you didn't name anybody in the three doesn't mean you cast anybody, you know, out of your the things you like. But my musical experience is very limited. My go-to is Oklahoma, which is
okay, kind of, yeah,
a good one. And my wife took me to Wicked when we had our honeymoon in Sydney, Australia. So I saw that. Whoa. And I mean, you know, when they say a picture of the Grand Canyon can't compare with the splendor, well, the same thing. I was like, I'm going to go to a musical with my wife. And at the end, I was like, I'm defying gravity. It's great. It's great.
So, yeah. Love it.
Well, so, I mean, it's a very interesting route you've taken. I mean, you know, not to say USC is a bad direction. If you find your way roundabouts to Broadway, at least you picked up some help from, you know, James Newton Howard and Bruce Broughton and John Debney. So maybe right. Can you explain about the workshops that you participated in?
Yeah. Okay. So I went to USC for the film scoring program, and they have an amazing program, right? And one of the wonderful, well, there's many wonderful things, right? But some of like the big highlights about the program are the ability to always work with a live orchestra. So that was, when I was going, I think it's now a 2-year program, but when I went, it was a year program. It's about 6 days a week. So, you know, in classwork and mentorship stuff, 5 days a week. And then on Saturdays, we'd be in the studio recording. So that was an invaluable experience, being able to work with live musicians all the time. And then got to study orchestration with Bruce Broughton, and he's an amazing composer, as you know. And then from there, it led to a mentorship opportunity through USC with James Newton Howard, and that was about a year that I got to do that. And let's see, when I was with James, he was working on After Earth, and I believe the other one was Maleficent at that time. So just to kind of be a fly on the wall and kind of, you know, soak in the experiences of what he was going through scoring these big blockbuster films. And it was really neat just to see someone who growing up I idolized, and then, like I said, got to, you know, be a fly on the wall and kind of ask questions and figure out how to navigate things in the business. And then from there, I got to go to the recording sessions for After Earth over at Sony. So USC really opened a lot of neat doors. I mean, I don't know how I would have gotten those experiences were it not for the USC program.
Gotcha.
So, big fan of USC. So if anyone can apply and go for it, try. It's so worth it. It's such an amazing, amazing opportunity. And you know, even since leaving USC, just the friendships you build and network you build, I still work with people from my class, whether I'm helping them on their projects or they come to help me on my projects. You just kind of make a family with it. I mean, you're stuck together for all day, every day, pretty much. So you got to learn to like each other.
Good point.
But it's great. It's great. So it was a wonderful experience.
Okay. Well, before we jump into the meat and potatoes of this interview, you mentioned After Earth. Of all the M. Night Shyamalan movies, that's one of the two that gets a lot of flack. But I have to say, as far as James Newton Howard is concerned, it's a great score. I mean, there's just so much to that, especially tracks like I Want to Work with Mom, and just a real, it's very, very lush. And
it is. I mean, yeah. So I'm not going to say anything about the film itself. But James always has the ability to elevate anything with his writing. I mean, I feel like I'm just going to gush over his writing. I don't mean to. It's just that good. He's just that good. And, you know, I hope to someday be as, you know, as at least decent as these people that I've gotten to rub elbows with. Because, I mean, and John Debney, oh, just amazing, amazing writers. So I hope to someday be up to their caliber.
Oh, good. Yeah, Debney has such a steeped and storied history with the Disney franchise. So I figure if you ever want to meet Alan Menken, I would just give John a call. I'm pretty sure.
It's true, I should. When we get off, I'm going to give him a call.
Well, great. You know, and one more thing mentioning USC. Is that where you met Bennett Lassiter? Or how did that relationship start?
Okay, yeah. So, okay, funny story. My wife and I were living in the Bay Area for a while, and just before USC, and I got connected with a producer out in Boston who was doing his thesis film, and ended up scoring that film. And then, like I said, he was in Boston, I was in the Bay Area, and then a couple years go by, and I'm now at USC, and Edgar is now at AFI. Edgar emails me and says, "Hey, you know, I'm on this other project now. I'm doing my grad work at AFI. Got this project. Would you be interested?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh! Like, I'm at USC, so I'm, you know, in Southern California now, and you're here. Like, let's meet up." And so we met, and that was great to finally meet in person. And then from there, he told me about this project he had called Son of a Barman. And Bennett Lassiter is the director of it, and so he showed me the script. I liked the script. We then, you know, had a coffee meeting, the three of us, and got along well, and that's kind of how Bennett and I met. So we worked on a short film, I guess, about five years ago. And so, yeah, so that's how Bennett and I met, through a random connection with a producer like 8 years earlier from Boston. So that's just kind of how this industry is. It's who you know, and like all these weird connections from years ago, and it's an interesting business.
Well, it also harkens back to the days, you know, when business cards were a lot more prominent and part of business. You know, if you got a business card at a convention, call a guy 3 years later, "Hey, I met you at the casino." It's like, let's work together. So,
right? Yeah, it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember when I first, you know, got started, I was like, "Oh, I got to get business cards." So, you know, I'm on like VistaPrint or something, one of those websites, looking for business cards and, you know, agonizing over just the right one. And so, you know, I get business cards and do all that. And then, yeah, whenever I'd, you know, be at a networking event or whatever, I keep everyone's cards and, you know, write all their info down. And fast forward to today, I don't know if anybody uses business cards anymore.
No.
So I've got a stack still sitting in the office.
Yeah.
I don't think anything's ever going to happen with them. But I do miss the business card days. I don't know. Not that it felt like trading cards. It was fun.
Just don't put them in your back pocket, or you'd insult the entire Asian market. So
there you go.
Well, you know, the great thing about the ultimate playlist of noise is that, I wouldn't say great thing. I would say maybe the complicated thing. It feels like you were stacked up against a lot of source music. So how did you decide to maybe go toe to toe with, what was it? Jefferson Starship and Rhapsody in Blue. I mean, like, oh, great. I have to shoehorn myself in between songs like that.
Right. I know. I was like, I can't do this. This was back in March or so. We spotted over at, we were at Sony. We spotted over at Sony. So we had our spotty section. And then from there, we kind of, you know, watched it down. Paused along the way, talked about specific things score wise, and then watched it again, and then talked about, okay, so sound design is very important. Let's stay away from that, because I don't want to step on any toes, right, with the sound design. And then the song. So the songs, I mean, yeah, that was the other one, because yeah, there's definitely some parts in the movie where it's literally the score butting up to the song. So, I mean, you know, the first thing, I'm like, okay, well, I got to figure out what key the song is in. That way I can just smoothly transition. And that took a little finessing, though, even if, you know, I had the key, because, you know, we've got this mood, right? We're creating with the score. And then the song has a very specific styling. So that took a little effort, trying to figure out how to get kind of dovetail in from the score to get into the song and do it tastefully without it being like, "Ooh, what just happened here? Why is there a little like record scratch kind of thing?" So that took a little a little work, but you know, got it dialed in, I think. And I think it works pretty well. And then, yeah, when they did the Rhapsody in Blue, I was, you know, really excited that they were able to use that. I mean, it just, I mean, I won't give anything away for the listeners or anything. But you know, when they're driving into New York, just for that song to start, it just, it's a very cool effect and feeling, I think it gives.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it conveyed the mood that it wanted to. And it, you know, it heightened the experience of them driving in. But I think that it's funny, you know, I've had plenty of talks about with people, friends of mine. It's like, well, you know, movies without music are just real life. So it's so funny how, like, you know, you put this mask of mystique over something banal and trite by just, you know, putting whether it's a classical tune or just something you penned on a MIDI or something like that. But
yeah,
I know. That's why I love talking to composers, is like what you do to entertainment is immeasurable. So
good. Yeah. And what's also cool about, again, you know, not that this gives anything away, but, you know, when they're walking around New York, you've got that piece, but then the sound design brilliantly, you know, crescendos in specific moments, highlighting certain things, you know, the sounds of New York. So yeah, kudos to the post team and the sound designer on how they handled all that. It's a very, very fun shot through all that sequence.
Well, what I noticed about the mood of your score is very ambient, very distant, pensive, restrained. You could probably could come up with 17 other things, but there was some guitar in it. So I'm wondering, was a guitar? Did that have? You get the idea because of what? You know, the golden guitar or Alex's, you know, being a musician, mm-hmm. was that inspiration to choose that instrument or what?
You know, okay. So going back to, the pitch. So I ended up pitching for the film. And the scene they gave me was the scene on the bridge, and, you know, Wendy's up there noodling around on her guitar. And, you know, I always struggle, you know, looking at a scene saying like, oh, there's a guitar there. Should I play guitar? Is that like too on the nose? How does that feel? And so when, you know, preparing my pitch, so the song that's actually in there is as is the pitch that I wrote. Nothing was changed from my pitch, which is pretty cool. And so I first started scoring it with just piano. And then, so because I'm a pianist, right? I do piano and everything. It's just the instrument I go to. But then a regular piano just felt too sterile. There's something about it that wasn't working. So I switched over to a felt piano, and it's just, it can be a little dirty sometimes, a little raspy, yet it's soft and intimate. It's got all sorts of really cool qualities, which is why I liked using it. But then as the scene evolved and Marcus is talking to Wendy, I felt like I needed something else to come in rather than like this ambiance that I've created with the pads and this piano melody. And then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to use the guitar. and then that's kind of how I brought the guitar in, and it felt right. And I think that's like the big thing. I try not to necessarily look at like, oh, they're playing a horn, I'm going to use a horn kind of thing. It's, for me, it's what feels right to the story, to essentially the sonic universe of the film. And so that's kind of how I approached it with the instrumentation, especially with that scene. So yes, there's a lot of, you know, bands in there, and, you know, there's Wendy's guitar in there, but I try not to let that influence me too much. But as the film progresses, I mean, it does become a little more guitar heavy, because then the piano doesn't quite give it the oomph it needs towards the end to kind of get it over the finish line. So the guitar definitely comes into play.
Gotcha. Well, when do you play guitar, or was it?
Okay. I don't. So, okay. So when starting this project, I was, I'm a pianist, and I have some wonderful guitarists I use. But it was hard because since I ended up using so much guitar for this, I was like, okay, I think I got to get a guitar and try and noodle around. And that didn't go so well. because I'm like trying, like I hear it in my head and I'm trying to convey it. I'm like, shoot, like I should just hire this guy and he'll just like knock it out real quick and then I'll just send it off to the team. So that's what I ended up doing a few times. Because like, it's supposed to sound like this. And they're like, oh, okay, we trust you. I'm like, no, it'll be better when we get a real guy, I promise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I should sign up for some guitar lessons since I seem to be using more guitar in my scores. I mean, obviously, like, you know, MIDI's great. You can get away with a lot of stuff. But to really, really convey, you know, you need the live elements. So no, I do not play guitar. I wish I did. And going forward, I think I will learn how to. Okay.
Well, no. The only reason I ask is it's sort of one of the regrets I have on my website. My first composer interview, I still don't know how I got it, but my first interview was James Newton Howard at the Dallas Symphony.
No.
And the one question I want to ask him is, how do you write for instruments that you don't know how to play? And I've since talked to Brian Tyler, who plays 70 instruments, and a lot of people.
Yes.
But the one I wanted to know was James. And then similarly, yeah, if you don't play the instrument that you're scoring for, what's that sort of trial and error? What professionals do you bring in? How do you weave the alchemy to make it sound great? So
yeah. Well, James is an amazing, amazing concert pianist. Freaking phenomenal. So he's got, you know, phenomenal piano chops. I feel like when it comes to doing mock-ups and things like that, mock-ups are tricky. I mean, you can definitely like pull some stuff off, especially with a lot of the newer samples out there. But guitar, I think, was tricky because like, you've got all these like really cool slides and effects and using pedals, whereas a violin, I mean, you can run it through effects and pedals and do all that. But at the end of the day, a violin kind of sounds like a violin, whereas a guitar, you know, can become very sound designy. And a lot of the pads actually used in the score for playlist were the guitar, but we processed them heavily to give it that paddy effect.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, if I, you know, was good at other instruments, I'd probably maybe be a better writer, better mock-up artist. But yeah, so I think if I can, especially on the demo process or when it comes to mock-ups, if there's something that samples just cannot convincingly pull off, then I will bring someone in just to really like drive home. This is what I'm intending it to sound like. This is really what it's supposed to, rather than like the hiccups you might find with samples.
Gotcha. Well, it's always good to have a ringer sometimes. So
that's right.
Well, you know, one of the things that I always like digging into, you know, maybe the psychological mindset of why things were done on a score. And I feel like this whole score sounds to me like it's uncertain. And I think that maybe mirrors both Marcus and Wendy's uncertainty. You know, Marcus is going into a life without sound. Wendy, no idea where she's going, just figuring it out. But do you put that mindset into what you're doing, or how do you like to write music?
You know, I do. So I always start, ideally, if I can, I like to start at the beginning of a film and score through from beginning to end. I always kind of look at it as being on the journey with the audience. And even though I've already seen it, you know, multiple times at this point, and I know all the spoilers and all of that, I still try and treat it as, okay, here I am, got my popcorn and soda, walking into the theater, got to sit down and, you know, immerse myself in this experience. And so that's kind of how I try and treat scoring. I'm sorry, I'm going to go on a tangent real quick. So I think like what ends up happening by doing it that way too, though, is then I start creating these themes early on. But then as I get to the end, I realize, okay, now that I've kind of got this roadwork and blueprint, now I can start pulling out little chunks and placing them earlier on, now that the audience has kind of gone through the journey. So I do try and put myself, you know, in the character's place, but I also really try and identify how the audience is taking in the information. And sometimes we throw that out the window. And, you know, again, it's so dependent upon the movie and, you know, what the movie really needs. Because sometimes you really need the score to to amp up in certain places to kind of push things along. Whereas with this film, there actually were times where Ben and I discussed like just toning it down, because the acting, I think, in my opinion, is incredibly strong. I mean, there's actually even some parts that we removed some music because we felt like, you know, the scene just kills it on its own. I don't need to be there. I'm just getting in the way. So try and, you know, put myself in the character's perspective, but also treat my score as, you know, being on the journey with audience.
Gotcha. You know, earlier you mentioned that you didn't want to give any of the spoilers away or ruin anything, but I think there's two beats in the movie that are real hard truths that, that Marcus finds himself up against. And without revealing it, you know, they'll find out on January 15th. But
yeah,
now that you've taken this step into music as a profession and writing, what hard truths have you been hit with that, you know, maybe not deter you from doing it, but maybe just say, all right, I'm in this business, I'm going to keep moving? Any mysteries that were dispelled?
I think it's just perseverance on, you know, being in this industry. It's definitely been a journey. I'm very, very fortunate that I have a supportive wife. And, you know, were it not for her being able to work full time and give me the opportunity to take on the gigs that I've taken on in the past to try and build my portfolio and build connections. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's definitely been times where I thought, like, I gave it a good go. I tried. but it's also one of those things where, you know, I've been, you know, music's been a part of my life for, you know, 30 years now. Like, I can't not do it. I don't know what else I would do. And I've had my side jobs along the way. You know, the typical, you gotta work at Starbucks, right? If you're in the arts, that's like what you do. So I've had my little side journeys along the way. But I think that's kind of been it, is just, you know, buckling down and being okay with the pace of the journey as well. I think that's something that's been a little tricky to wrestle with sometimes, because you see your colleagues, you know, get in the fast lane real quick and zoom off, and you're still cruising, not necessarily in the slow lane, but, you know, in the middle lane.
Yeah.
And so, but again, I mean, everyone has their own journey. You can't replicate, you know, that person meeting that person who knew that person randomly. It's just, you can't compare yourself. You just gotta enjoy the journey that you're on and not compare yourself. And like I said, I've been fortunate to have a supportive wife who's, you know, let me really delve into this world head first and just go for it.
That's great to hear. And yeah, with three children, I can only imagine that she's doing a lot of heavy lifting while you're doing a lot of heavy penning.
That's been an interesting thing, because we've got a 6-year-old, 4-year-old, and 1-year-old. And, you know, just with the pandemic and work and deadlines and her job. So it's just been a circus.
Well, one of the things that character Marcus says in the beginning of the movie, it was love at first sound. So what were some of the sounds that you gravitate toward? What are things that you like? What are, you know, it, not wearing two earphones, one on top of each other, what are things that you just, it's decidedly Eric?
Ooh, in my scores?
Personal, let's just say personal, not professional.
Like, okay.
You know, do you like to listen to Frank Zappa in the bathtub? Do you, you know, you yodel, you know, my heart will go on while you're on the slopes? I have no idea. I'm just like, what?
Yeah, but that actually would be fun, because I do like to ski. Next time, actually.
Man in Thousand Oaks calls an avalanche while singing My Heart Will Go On.
Oh, man. I think I just like to sit and just listen, especially to film scores. So listening to film scores can be tricky sometimes. John Powell talks about this, actually, about not listening to film scores, because, you know, you are what you ingest, right? And then you output what you've been listening to. So, you know, ever since, you know, he mentioned that, I always try and be very careful of, you know, listening to other people's film scores. But I can't help it. I do. And so I think a lot of it is like, you know, just sit in quiet, you know, kids are in bed. It's just quiet. I'm, you know, staring out the window, you know, just kind of letting the music take me on the emotional journey kind of thing, is what I like to do. You know, anything piano heavy. I think one of the first scores I really, really remember as a kid was Thomas Newman's Meet Joe Black. And that was a very piano, oboe, and string heavy score. And piano being the first thing that I'm like, oh, I'm taking piano lessons. And it was the first thing like my ear gravitated towards. And then the oboe, I was like, oh, what's that instrument? Beautiful. It's just making me feel all these feelings. And so I'll always remember that score and how it made me feel. And that was, like I said, piano, oboe, string orchestra. And of course, there were, you know, other things, but those were the three elements my ear really picked up on. And then like I said, being a pianist, I think I always gravitate towards using piano on my score, even if like I'm doing something that's a little more electronic or experimental. It might be a piano, but you can't tell it's a piano anymore because I've, you know, morphed it and done all kinds of silly things to it. But being a pianist, I, you know, often write at the piano and create my melodies at the piano, and that's just where I'm comfortable.
Excellent. You know, the movie comes out in a couple days, but I'm sure you're already on to other things. Is there anything you can share that you're excited about? Anything that's been announced?
Yeah. So Under the Stadium Lights comes out in, I think, February. Could be March, February. And that's Lawrence Fishburne football film about a high school Texas team. Looking forward to that one. That one was a fun one to score. So I was actually working on that one at the same time as Ultimate Playlist, and the scores could not be any different because that's, you know, a big orchestral thematic, you know, Rudy kind of score. And then on the opposite side, we got this one, which is very intimate, you know, very delicate at times. So that was really fun. That, you know, kept me on my toes. So I really enjoyed doing that one. And so that one comes out soon. And then just started this art house film. I can't quite say the title yet, but that one is fun, working on that one. And then I've got a horse film called Adeline coming up, and that's about therapy horses. So I'm excited about that. And, you know, can finally have a movie that my kids can see because a lot of stuff, yeah, they not yet. So I'm excited about that because I often ask, oh, when can we see your film? It's like, oh, in a few years.
Okay.
So that one's coming up. So I'm excited about that one. That one should be fun.
Oh, great. Well, and actually that's one thing, mentioning your children one more time, that's something I caught in your bio. You're excited to show them Disney movies. So
yes.
What are some of your go-tos, and what do you hope that they like? Because I'm at the point where I'm showing my daughter some stuff and she's like, okay, I want to watch TV. Like, I've been storing these for years to get that answer.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. How old is your daughter?
She's going to be 6 in April.
Going to be 6. Okay. So it's tricky. It's tricky because, you know, for me it was, you know, Rescuers and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin. And I feel like they just, you know, don't really make the kids' TV shows like that anymore. They gravitate towards more of the computer generated stuff. So the kids, you know, they enjoy Cars and Moana, which I'm excited about Moana because it's, you know, musical. But yeah, I was a little bummed out when I was showing them Beauty and the Beast, and they're like, eh. And, you know, also, and then, you know, Little Mermaid. But we're also at the point where sometimes we still get a little bit scared, even though we've talked about, you know, just make believe and good guys win kind of thing. But Ursula was a little scary, so we might try that one in a year or so for them. But yeah, so Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, you know, some of the classics, but they tend to want like Paw Patrol and DJ Masks and things like that. So maybe in a couple years we can sit down and they could really appreciate it. But I enjoy going back through them because it's been years since I've sat down to watch some of those films. So I've enjoyed going back, and then especially with Rescuers. So
Bruce Broughton, like I said, was one of my teachers at USC, and he had scored that film. And I don't know why, but very foolishly, one of the big scenes in the film, I decided to do as like my final rescore project for USC. Wow. And so I, you know, wrote the music for the scene, and I'm like, you know, conducting it. And then there's Bruce Broughton sitting next to me, like, you know, taking notes. And I'm like, what the frick did I do? Why am I doing this in front of the man who created this beautiful score? So, yeah, a silly thing that had occurred, but yeah.
Excellent. But, you know, I mean, if you didn't go on this course, you wouldn't have these stories to share. So, I mean,
that's right. That's right. No. And yeah, Bruce is very supportive of my, of the piece that I had written, but yeah, I mean, it pales in comparison to what he wrote for the original.
Well, great. Well, Eric, it's been a blast. Thank you for your time. Thank you for letting us enjoy your garage for the time being.
And, you're welcome.
Have a great rest of the week.
All right. Take care.